This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Well, we start the program, as always, with some tenor saxophone music by John Ellis, who just has a new CD out called Dance Like There's No Tomorrow, recorded in New Orleans with, of all things, a sousaphone, a drummer, and I forget the other instrument, but it's a strange combination. Oh, a Hammond B3 organ. So, John Ellis on sax, and today on Keeping the Faith, we're talking with Wayne Wagers. Wayne, do you like jazz music?
I really do. I'm a Keith Jarrett fan.
Ah, okay. Wayne is the director of Illini Life Christian Fellowship and represents the Great Commission Ministries. Tell us a little bit about those groups, Wayne.
GCM is a missionary organization, and it sponsors about 300 missionaries around the world, Europe, Latin America, here in the United States. We grew out-of-campus ministries around the country and were restarted in 89 with the help of Campus Crusade.
Now tell folks what Campus Crusade is who may not know.
Campus Crusade is the largest campus ministry in the world, about 20,000 staff, started in the 50s by Bill Bright. They seem to be everywhere on the planet right now.
Now, you've been on this campus how long?
Going on 25 years.
25 years. So you remember when WILL was not in this building?
I do. I remember its days with wires poking out of the ceiling in Gregory Hall. Yeah.
How did you happen to come to Illinois 25 years ago?
I felt like God was calling me to go overseas as a missionary, but I had only a college degree and some experience teaching high school. I wanted to teach in a technical school in probably Africa, and I came here to town to take a job with a local engineering company to get some experience in the real world of engineering before I went overseas. And while that was going on, I fell in love with this campus and doing ministry with the students here.
Now, you used the phrase, you felt like God was calling you. People hear that often and don't know what it means. I mean, do you actually hear a voice? So what does that mean?
I think you do, in some cases, hear a voice in your mind that appears to be different from what you would say. And for me, that happened back at Western Illinois University. It seemed contrary to anything that I wanted, but it seemed strong, and it came with a sense of intuition, strong intuition that this is from God.
And how would one test that? How would you know if it was from God or not?
Well, you look first to see if what you're hearing sounds like what God has asked us to do in the Scriptures, and I did go out and test that through. I told God I couldn't be a missionary because I was doing a lot of things that were wrong, and so he said, go be a teacher first and try your hand in a church and get under some leadership that will see whether you have what it takes, and I did all those things.
So you were an engineering student at Western Illinois?
I was an industrial technology student and changed my major to industrial education. To become a teacher because I thought, man, I'm going to need to communicate. I'm going to need to learn to lead people if I'm going to be in mission. So I taught 4 years of industrial arts at a high school in Clifton, Illinois.
And how come you didn't end up in the mission field, or did you?
Well, I do consider myself a missionary. I'm a missionary to a specific group of people here at the University of Illinois. I came to the conclusion, first of all, that I'm poor at languages. I ran into a number of health problems, and I also found myself being very successful in the mid-80s in campus ministry, and I took that as a clarification that this was the mission field that God had for me. Now, I'm not saying he's not going to call me overseas sometime in the future, but not right now.
Now, you have a family. Where did the family come in this whole process? Were you settled here before you started a family?
No, I came here in 84, single, and it looked like that was going to stay that way for a long time. And I met a student here at the U of I, and It's kind of a scandalous story, really. I think she kind of hit on me, and next thing you know, we're married, and we didn't have children until I was 42, so I've, my two boys are here in the studio with me, and they have kind of an elderly father.
So I take it your spouse was pleased with the kind of work you were doing and supportive?
I would say. I mean, I made it really clear what I was going to do. She went to seminary at Trinity Evangelical Divinity School in Deerfield, and I kept telling her, this is what I'm going to do with my life. Are you sure you want to be part of this? And, you know, only a couple of times in 15 years has she gone, what in the world are we doing?
Tell us a little bit about what you are doing. What does the Illini Life Christian Fellowship do?
Well, we're a church, and we're also a campus student group. We're two things at the same time. We do everything that a church does. We participate in worship together. We study the Bible. We're broken down into various home fellowships. We serve in the community and overseas. And we do a lot of work in meeting students and guiding them in their relationships and in their vocation with their studies. We're not a perfect church by any means, but we do the best we can to be a living community of faith on this campus.
And where are you located?
Well, we have our offices in Johnstown Center, but we meet in different lecture halls. The student group meets in lecture halls all over campus, and the church part of our fellowship meets in homes all around town.
And how many people are involved in your church and your campus ministry?
Oh, we're pretty small. We're maybe 100 to 150. It varies.
And how are you connected to others in what you described as the Great Commission Ministry churches?
Well, in the last few years, things have changed for us, and we have kind of moved into our own world. There's about 18 campus churches around the country, University of Michigan, Michigan State, a couple of campuses in Texas, the Ohio State University, and we're all linked by this common purpose, and a lot of us are linked by the fact that we're employed by GCM, and that's our mission. We are partnering with other Christian groups around the world as well, InterVarsities on different campuses and so on.
And the GCM Ministries is pretty pretty extensive. I mean, there's a big budget. There's a lot of people involved in that.
Well, it's a $20 million organization. I don't know if that's a lot of money today, but we have several churches in Europe. We're a fairly our sister organization, GC Latin America, is pretty successful in El Salvador and Honduras, places like that.
And for people who might not know, what's the phrase Great Commission? Where does that come from?
It comes from Matthew chapter 28, where Jesus said to his followers, go to all the world and make disciples of all nations. And I think that's what we hope to do. We're trying to reach out with the good news of Jesus Christ anywhere we can go.
Now, as an evangelical church that does take that kind of outreach seriously, how do you relate to those of other faiths? I mean, we're going to talk in a few minutes about the announced topic of our today, which is we're talking about the whole difference between intelligent design and evolution and ways those can be understood. But before we get to that, how do you relate to people who believe very differently about their own faith? People who might be Hindus or Muslims or Christians of a different sort, Catholics, liberal Protestants, whatever.
Absolutely, and I think that we hope we're acting as equals, as friends. I have close relationships with those at Hillel, with liberal Protestants, like Karen at the University United Church of Christ, or Community United Church of Christ. Father Swetlin and I were good friends at St. John's. as much as we can, we see that these people are equals before God as we are. We'd happen to disagree in some areas, but I hope we can discuss our disagreements in a very friendly way.
And you've been an active member of the University of Illinois Religious Workers Association for many, many years.
I have, and Steve, sometimes I'm sad because I miss too many meetings. I've been traveling so much this year. But, yeah, we have quite an organization there with Muslims and Jews and Catholics and Orthodox and Evangelicals and liberal Protestants and Baha'i. It's been very interesting to be part of that group.
Well, let's do focus in on our announced topic of evolution and the idea of intelligent design. And let me encourage listeners, as you're hearing what Wayne and I are talking about, if you'd like to join us, you can do that easily by telephone. Anywhere the program is heard, including on the Internet, if you're listening on computer radio, 1-800-222-9455 is a toll-free number. That's 1-800-222-WILL. If you're in Champaign-Urbana, you can access a couple local lines by punching in 333-9455. So you've had this ministry on this campus personally. You've been involved for 25 years. You yourself come from a technical practical background, so you know about science and rationality and all of those things. How does someone within your religious training and tradition think about intelligent design, evolution, those kind of issues?
You know, one of the things that I've been thinking about is that certainly I'm not an expert. I'm not a biochemist or an astrophysicist, but I'm also not a disinterested person that never pays attention to the issues. In one sense, I would say the analogy I might make is that I'm a jurist. There are expert witnesses in each field, and I, by my choice, have been an active listener in these discussions for a long time, which makes me something like a jurist. I hear a lot of the testimony, and then what I do is I feel from my congregation a sense that I need to give a verdict on where I stand. So I'm not a scientist in that sense, but I'm also not somebody that's not tuned in.
So as a pastor, you feel an obligation to at least interpret through your filters to the people who gather in your church your understanding of these things.
Yeah, like I would anything else. I think I need to watch what's going on with AIDS in the world and how we're helping the poor, have a sense of being able to give a reasonable answer as I teach publicly to a whole variety of issues.
And so you read about these things, you talk to people on campus. What kind of conclusions have you come to personally?
Well, I think that there's really two aspects of this subject of creationism and intelligent design that I think I'd like to touch on today. The first is that we're definitely in a cultural situation where ID, intelligent design, is being talked about as it touches on science and the public schools. But there's also a second story going on that gets almost no attention in the national media. And that's the struggle within conservative Christianity on how God created the world, how long God took, what was there a gradual process, or did things just poof into existence, and how to understand that through the holy texts. So there's two ways that in which I interact with this subject. One is an internal, one is external. And I thought maybe we would touch on the larger debate first. I think Christians in general are in a basic agreement that there's no one single piece of evidence that God exists. But, you know, it's a putting together of pieces of a puzzle. But we do think that looking at what is there in nature is part of what it means to come to faith. Psalm 19 says, "The heavens declare the glory of God, and the skies proclaim the work of his hands." We're seeing something in nature that is profound. It means something. So that's the first place that I start. And then in Romans 1:20, it says, "Since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, His eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that men are without excuse. So we see from our scriptures that we're going to be held accountable for what we see in nature as it's guiding us to belief.
Now, nature seems to be such a mix. I mean, there's order in nature, there's rationality in nature, but there's also great disorder and horrible things happen mm-hmm. in the natural world.
Mm-hmm.
If you're trying to get a picture of God there, don't you get a real mixed picture?
At face value, you might. But the way I've come to understand it, after looking at these problems for a long time, is that the basic structure of nature and the world is one of order. It appears to be designed and designed very well. But we also see something going on in the world that I think touches on what it says in Genesis 3, that the world has somehow been damaged. We see a damaged design, not a disorder that has trouble in it. We see a damaged design. And so a lot of what seems to be disordered isn't really that way from the beginning, but is a corrupt version of the beautifully designed original piece.
So when you look at nature through the eyes of science, and when scientists say, well, the Earth is this many billions of years old, seems to have been created in this way with a big bang or whatever, what does someone from a conservative evangelical Christian background, how do you think about that?
Well, there's really two camps, and I think this never gets touched on. Maybe there's more than two, but personally, I believe the Earth is old, and I believe the universe is old, and I believe there's been change over time, and I don't think science is in any way an enemy to faith. I believe it's an ally. Science really believes that there is such a thing as true truth, and things don't change based upon your perception of it. It's there, and we can discover what the truth is about a matter in that sense that science is an ally. There are other Christians who read the Genesis 1 and Genesis 2 text and they think, well, those are literal 24-hour days. We don't see it that way. But there are those that I have been in league with that clearly have believed that and believe that very emotionally.
And so how do those kind of discussions, where do they take place? Do students talk about these things, college students?
Sometimes. I'd say it's happening less now. And I don't exactly know why. The search for truth is less important. I think we're surfing on a lot of intuition today. But the discussions that I have is primarily with other Christian leaders. Now, the one time where I do have it come up with students is if I speak on it publicly and
sure.
I say that the universe is old and someone comes up and says, wow, you don't believe Genesis 1. I said, yes, I do. I just believe that those are God's work days and that it's an artful telling in a Hebrew piece of prose. My more fundamentalist friends say, oh, my goodness, that's heresy. You know, you can't trust anything then. If you're going to interpret that as symbolic, are you going to interpret the resurrection as symbolic? I don't believe the slippery slope is that easy to fall down on that particular issue, but they do.
So tell us who supports the intelligent design and who is it that's pushing so hard to get that notion in the public schools as opposed to evolution?
Well, I would say that the intelligent design movement in and of itself was founded out of a group called the Discovery Institute. And they had a very nice preface that the intelligent design is the scientific theory of intelligent design. It holds that certain features of the universe and of living things are best explained by an intelligent cause rather than an undirected process such as natural selection. They're saying that certain features of nature do that. And they don't even go out of their way. They're actually going out of their way to say, we don't know who that intelligent cause is. Now, those people that started the ID movement, to to be honest, we're primarily people who believe in a young Earth and a young universe. And
in spite of scientific evidence.
Well, they would say there's scientific evidence to the contrary, but what they tried to do is to say that the discussion of old and young Earth is so divisive, so emotional. Why don't we take that off the table and just talk about intelligent design? That does nature seem to have intelligence and design built right into its structure?
Let me take a minute and just give the telephone numbers again if listeners would like to give us a call. In Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We'll put you in touch with our guest, Wayne Wager, here at WILL. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs on Sunday night. And we know they're heard also on the Internet. And if you're listening long distance that way or through your radio, there's a toll-free number you may use, 1-800-222-9455. We're talking about intelligent design and evolution, and Wayne represents the Illini Life Christian Fellowship here on campus, which is associated with the Great Commission Ministries churches. Wayne, when you talk about the young Earth, how young do some people think it is?
Well, there are very few that actually think it's 6,000.
Uh-huh.
But the Institute for Creation Research would say it's anywhere from 20,000 to 60,000 years old.
And so they think that God put fossils in rocks to fool us, or what?
Some do. Some actually do. Some believe from the book of Job that dinosaurs lived among humankind. It talks about the behemoth, who is a massive creature with a large tail. I think they ask the question, what large creatures have large tails other than dinosaurs? But I'm not part of that camp. I believe that the Big Bang happened 18 billion years ago, and I believe that was God saying, let there be light.
Oh. That on a campus like this, you run into scientists who are, some are theists, some believe there's a divinity, some are agnostics, choose not to think about that, some are atheists who are very, very convinced that there's no divine being. How do you talk to these people about these kind of issues?
We definitely don't want to come and say you're wrong. We hope to be in a dialogue with people. Have you thought about this? Have you thought about this? One question I ask people is, do you believe we're alone in the universe? Often that leads us to a discussion of life on other planets. And one interesting aspect of this discussion that's come up a few times is the project called SETI, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. And so I ask, you know, how would we know whether transmissions, and we're listening all the time for those in space, how would we know whether that's just a jumble of radio signals coming from a star or something with an intelligent message to it? They've never thought about that. But there is a way that scientists believe that we can tell that something is designed and sent from an intelligence, and ways in which it would not be. We believe that we can unravel something intelligent and designed, but I ask, what about in nature itself? Don't we have structures and complexity and order and information found in nature be very comparable to the data that we might receive from outer space that we deem coming from an intelligent source? How can we think we can know intelligence from outer space, but we would never know it in nature? So we then open the door to talk about the types of design that we see in the cosmos and in DNA, in the living cell, things along that line. It's just a discussion. It takes days.
My wife's a microbiologist, and she sees evolution happening at the microbial level, daily, and counts on it to understand the structures that are involved, and finds out about what things in the human body, antibiotic resistances, and that kind of information. And when she encounters people who sort of don't accept evolution and who oppose it being taught in the public schools, I mean, she's really just incredulous. I mean, she says, well, we'll just come to the lab. I'll show you.
Well, I think that there is a debate going on. I lived with a biochemist and a geneticist for 6 years, and they would distinguish between forms of microevolution and macroevolution. We know that change over time happens in living creatures. We know that creatures adapt. No one should be opposing that notion. I think we talk past each other sometimes. I think what intelligent design thinkers want us to look at is this an unaided process over billions of years that is random without any supernatural intervention at all? And there are many things that lead us to be incredulous about that. How organisms that are extremely simple could have come about, even though it would require 8, sometimes 15 individual systems all appearing at once in order for that very simple creature to be viable. The irreducible complexity is what I'm talking about. Questions of that sort. As far as the public schools, you brought up the public schools. I'm not thinking that we ought to stop the teaching of evolution in the public schools. My concern is that in the public schools, we have men and women who very smugly proclaim that this is all there is. There is no God. There is no religion. They leave science and move into their own kind of pontificating. If we could simply present that this is a mechanism that we see and that some people believe there could be an intelligent cause, we could be perfectly at peace with that.
Would you be comfortable if that teacher were, say, a Muslim?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Or a Hindu who believes in many gods?
As long as we could present that there are differing viewpoints and people are going to need to decide on their own. And I wouldn't even want to mandate it. Here's the bottom line. What I would say is, if someone is coming from a position where they believe intuitively that there's something more than naturalism, materialism, they should be free to suggest that there might be other ways to say it without coming under some sort of disciplinary action by a school board. Even if a teacher is an atheist and they say some people believe that there's an intelligent cause behind nature, I personally don't believe that. I think they should be allowed to say that. But let's not make people fear speaking up. The atmosphere of fear and the atmosphere of intolerance on either side is, I think, harmful to our nation, the schools.
We're about halfway through our program of Keeping the Faith this afternoon with our guest, Wayne Wager, who is the pastor of the Illini Life Church here at the University of Illinois, Illini Life Christian Fellowship, which is associated with the Great Commission Ministries Churches. He's been on this campus for 25 years, and we're talking with him today about intelligent design and evolution. Encourage listeners to call in. Next week, we'll be talking with Mark Gungor about marriage and relationships on June 8th here on Keeping the Faith. Our guest will be a professor at the university in the School of Dance, Linda Lahovic. We'll be talking about the various types of dance and meanings involved and values and ethics. On June 15, our guest will be Tim Stromer by phone. He represents the organization Kids Against Hunger. So on June 15, our guest here on Keeping the Faith will be Tim Stromer talking to us by phone from Minneapolis. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these programs, and I'm the director of the University YMCA for another couple months until when I retire in late August. And we're currently doing one of our biggest projects of the year, which is called Dump and Run. And I have a particular request to listeners in the Champaign-Urbana area. I know people hear this program all around the Midwest and even farther by computer radio. But if you're in Champaign-Urbana and would like an interesting volunteer activity this week, starting on Tuesday at 9 o'clock, all the Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday this week, if you're free during the day, we'd love to have you come and help sort some of the many things that have been donated to the Y by students who've left town or left the area, graduated, moved on, and other people in the community who've donated furniture and household goods and electronics and clothes. And we're in the process of sorting these things and putting them in boxes and labeling them and putting them on a truck. And you won't have to do heavy lifting. We've got people, special people to do that who like that sort of thing. But we could sure use some help sorting and labeling if you have a few hours this week, because we're just overwhelmed. We've had such a huge response to our request for items that can be recycled, still useful, particularly to students who come here in the fall from many different countries. We'll have a huge sale in the fall. We're loading up these semi-trailer trucks. We've already got two completely filled, and we're going to be starting on a third soon. So if you could volunteer any, do call the University YMCA. My number is, I'll be there Tuesday, 337-1500, 337-1500 at area code 217. And then we have a little bonus for you. If you work at least 4 hours as a volunteer, you can then get first dibs on some of these things, because we'll have some other people put a price on them. And if there's some things that you'd like that are in our collection, you get a chance to do that. But mainly we're hoping people will volunteer because of wanting to help out a good recycling project that also helps produce some very much needed income for our University YMCA and its programs. So if you're free this week, do give us a call at the Y, 337-1500, and we'll tell you when where to park and things like that to help us out. You can also come by bus. There's a lot of buses to go right by the Y on campus. Well, let's get back to our guest, Wayne Wager. Wayne, where do you come from? Where did you grow up?
Grew up in the north suburbs of Chicago, Northfield. Went to Neutra High School. A little fun piece of trivia. Station manager Jay Pierce here at WILL. He and I were in the same homeroom for 3 years at Neutra we were so... our behavior was so bad that they actually broke up our homeroom like the diaspora and sent us to all different homerooms at New Trier. But Jay and I have talked about this, but we haven't run into each other in a long time.
And where did you go after New Trier?
Western Illinois University for 7 years.
Went directly to Western. Okay. And then you were teaching where? What part of the state?
Clifton, Chabance, Ashcombe, Illinois, Clifton Central High School for 4 years, and then here for last 24.
Okay. We're talking about intelligent design and evolution. Some people just are tired of the topic. I mean, they feel like, well, surely this is settled by now. I guess I don't find many people who around the university want to talk about it. They just say, can't we accept the science?
Yeah, and I think we can accept the science to some extent. It's really some of the additional conclusions that are made from it. I remember Carl Sagan in the old television series Cosmos. He said, "We are alone in the universe." Are we? If we say that science is materialism, why so much pontificating about the metaphysical? And they do on both sides. Let's not forget that a number of well-respected scientists do believe in intelligent design. If I could read you just a couple of quotes here. Astronomer George Greenstein, "As we survey the evidence," he says, "the thought instantly arises that some supernatural agency must be involved." Nobel Prize winner Arno Penzias. Astronomy leads us to a unique event, a universe created out of nothing, one with the very delicate balance needed to provide exactly the conditions required to permit life, and one which has an underlying, one might say, supernatural plan. Yet perhaps this subject does grow old, though, because of the rancor surrounding it. I mean, Ben Stein has this movie out in the theaters right now, alleging a lot of prejudice and bigotry towards people who believe in intelligent design. And there is a sour tone to both sides of this discussion. I think that gets what makes it get old quickly, where there's a sense that we're going to force this into the public schools, or we're going to force it out of the public schools. I think that's what people grow weary of. I don't think they grow weary of thinking about the beauty and the wonder of nature and where it might have come from.
I've not seen the Ben Stein movie, but I have a friend from college who saw it, and he emailed me from Atlanta and was saying that I should see it because he knows that I've worked on a university campuses all my adult life, and he says that Ben Stein's movie indicates that people who have any kind of belief in God are being persecuted on university campuses if they in any way let that be known. Have you had that experience?
Well, I'm not a professor. I haven't personally had that experience, but in living very close to two different departments here at the university, and I was the host of their Christmas parties and so on, these PhD candidates and some of them full professors admitted, they said, oh yeah, it's a very difficult environment. You don't want to bring this up. It may not get you fired, but it may keep you from getting tenure.
Really?
And that is a persecution that's out there right now, and it's going on, a big case right now, coming out of Iowa State with this Guillermo Gonzalez, lost his bid for tenure, became a subject of a New York Times article and then picked up by the Des Moines Register, based upon a request for public information by the Discovery Institute. The email correspondence was released to the public, and it's very clear in the interdepartmental email that this professor was denied tenure because of his outspoken stand on design. But the court decided that email is not reliable for a court case, and they threw it out. But it's pretty clear that people are persecuted over their religious beliefs as it applies to science.
I'm not familiar with this particular case. Was the problem that this professor was speaking about those religious ideas in science, in a science class?
No, what he did is he made a beautiful film called The Privileged Planet. Dr. Gonzalez, by the way, believes in evolution and the Earth is old. What he was challenging was the concept that Sagan brings forth in the film series Cosmos, that there is nothing special about the Earth, that we're a pale blue dot in the middle of nowhere. And what Gonzalez and his partner did is show that we are a privileged planet, that we are special, and that the New York Times picked that up and implied that means he's anti-evolution, which he is not, but the label stuck. And according to the Des Moines Register, it really did make a difference in this professor's life.
I've been interviewing people on this program for about over 9 years now, and several of them have been scientists who have beliefs in God and are active Christians or Muslims or various religious traditions, many Jewish professors. And I've not had any of them say that those beliefs have affected their progress toward tenure, the way they're treated by the university or their colleagues. So I'm just surprised.
Yeah, I think what we would need to do to determine whether there really is an issue here is to go out and statistically look at it, which, you know, you and I haven't done that. But we, is it a huge problem? I don't know to what extent. But I do know that it is an area where professors on this campus, and I've spoken to at least a dozen, who say, I keep my head low on this subject. One of my friends was at a presentation in the School of Biochemistry here about 10 years ago. And the person presenting their research, who was not religious, said near the end of his presentation to, say, 50, 60 scientists, the complexity in the design that I think I've found here makes me reconsider whether special creation really should not be ruled out. And a voice in the audience came, ha! Now he said, no, really, I'm not a religious person, but I really think we should look at it even more angrily. Ha! There is an emotional nerve that we're hitting here. Oh. Even if it doesn't end up costing someone their job, there is something here that raises the fur on our necks. I don't know what it is exactly, other than the fact that if there is a God, he or whatever may have authority over our life that we don't want.
Now, as an evangelical pastor, when you feel, you know, your organization is called the Great Commission, the go and evangelize, go and tell the spread the gospel of Jesus Christ. You want to do this in a way that you consider the people you're talking with equals. You said you want to be friends with these folks, but isn't your motive to change them, to convert them? Isn't that what you're primarily about?
I certainly hope, like D.L. Moody once said, that I'm not the one converting anybody. Uh-huh. We are ambassadors for God. We are, in our mind, we're presenting God's case. In that sense, we hope God's the one that's converting or compelling someone. A lot of what I do when I sit with people is I just ask them, have you thought about this? Can I share with you what I'm learning? Would you want to consider this further? And if they don't, we move on. Maybe we don't even see each other again. But I don't want to be high-pressure salesman. I simply want to enter into the dialogue with as many people as I can and see if this is resonating with them. If God is indeed reaching this whole world, then he's the one that's going to be speaking to them, not me. And I'm just part of that process.
And you're willing to listen, you're willing to put yourself in a vulnerable position to be converted to something new as well?
Oh, yeah. I like it when I'm talking to a group of agnostics or people from another faith and I'm outnumbered. I prefer even to be alone. I invited a whole dorm floor in the 80s to come and roast the preacher, and they could just gang up on me all they wanted. Uh-huh. I joined the Illini Atheists in 86. I said, bring it on, guys, what do you think? I was the only Christian there. I entered into a relationship with a fundamentalist Muslim from Pakistan, and I let him ask me all of his questions and challenge me with all of the inaccuracies in the Bible. I would love to be in that dialogue.
So is there objective truth? Is there objective standards by which you can decide?
Well, everybody has an opinion on that, I'm sure. I would hope that more people would be asking that question. Did the universe begin at a point in time, as the general theory of relativity suggests? If it did, what started the universe? From nothing, nothing comes. Therefore, there must have been something. What was the something? Let's just go there. If I can help someone just become a theist, that's a big step. Sometimes I'm sad that so few people are having this type of discussion. We're talking about why the Cubs blew another close game today. We're talking about how much gas costs. Those are important things. But this is way more important a subject. And I wish we were having it more.
Do you find students are interested in these kind of basic questions?
I think they are to a point. I think U of I students are often under what they feel is an awful lot of pressure. They don't have the time to study things that they would love to study. They've got a gun held to their head, and they're trying to survive. They've also got 100 emails in their box and a lot of things they want to do online. I think they get bogged down, and they don't have someone encouraging them enough into this type of discussion. That's some of what we do, is we bring these issues up and get people discussing them.
Evangelicals are often accused of not being involved in social ministries, of concern for the poor, of concern for people who are discriminated against, of being rather narrow in their focus. How do you respond to those kind of criticisms?
Two ways. First, some of it's true, is that we have been slow at times. That was the last time I was on Keeping the Faith, when I was talking about that. In all fairness, though, the organizations like World Vision that are the primary groups working in refugee camps are evangelical Christian groups. I want to own the fact that we were slow as a movement to get involved. But now I think we're involved to the extent that it's almost diminishing our evangelicalism. I just came from Honduras over spring break, where we're working to build a 100-house subdivision for people affected and infected with HIV. I think all of our ministries are now participating quite heavily in relief to the poor. I'd say a second area that we're slower to get involved in is in the area of justice, in fighting for not just doing charity, but fighting the very reasons why there are poor. And I think we're looking more and more at that.
You quoted earlier the Great Commission that's found in Matthew chapter 28. There are some evangelical Christians who are now calling themselves red-letter Christians because they focus on what Jesus said. I'm not saying more than who Jesus is, they believe, but they at least want to give equal weight to that. And Matthew 25 is one of their favorite chapters that talks about people being judged eventually by God by what they actually do, mm-hmm. what kind of aid they give to people in need. Is that a strong movement within evangelical Christianity these days?
Oh, absolutely. I'd say that we are at a sea change moment across all of biblical Christianity. Brian McLaren's book, Everything Must Change, is, I would say, he's at the forefront of the red-letter Christian, if you want to call it a movement, post-evangelicalism, post-modernism. Steve, I do think it's a bit of a pendulum swing. I don't think Jesus would say, just focus on my words, but listen to those that come after, that knew me. I don't want us to swing the pendulum so far the other way that we forget the beautiful things that the Apostle Paul, Peter, and John gave us. But I do think all people will be judged based upon the good that they did do. But I don't believe that that is the way that people are made right with God. They're made right with God because of what Christ did on the cross. But if Christ on the cross affected your life, there better be good coming from your life, or I think you're fooling yourself. And many have.
We're down to our last 7 or 8 minutes, but we could still squeeze in a phone call or two if people would like to join the conversation with Wayne Wager. Do call Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Elsewhere, toll-free, 800-222-9455. So what about people, since Christianity is a minority in the world, who've never heard this kind of news, who don't know anything about Jesus? How do you think about those folks?
What about those who have never heard the gospel? Well, in the book of Acts, there is a place where the Apostle Peter speaks to a large crowd, and he says, in the past, God overlooked such ignorance, but is now calling all men to repentance. In places in the world where people have never heard the gospel, I believe that they are like people in the past. God is going to overlook their ignorance of the specifics of what we find in the story about Jesus. They will be judged based upon the light that they had. And I believe that God knows what those standards are. If we did it a whole other show, we could talk about what might be the minimum standards. But also, I think the Holy Spirit is reaching into every culture of the world, and he is finding those that will respond to him.
We have a caller on line number one. Welcome to Keeping the Faith. Go right ahead, please.
It is delightful to be able to talk with you today. I am a professor in biology at this university. In fact, I took my bachelor's degree from a Jesuit university, and besides my degrees in science, I took a minor in philosophy and a minor in theology. But I think that you reduce this whole concept of special creation and evolution into simplistic terms. Science demands proof, empirical proof. It is totally limited to the empirical reality. It cannot evaluate religion. Religion is much broader. It's transcendent. So if you try to prove with science, if you try to prove God as an empirical entity with science, you're going to fail because the belief in God is faith. I am a man of faith. I have no problems with understanding and having being led with the data for evolution. But I never mix the two because they are totally different entities. Both are part of our human nature. And I don't see any great conflict between the two. And I think the idea of trying to teach creationism as science is fundamentally wrong because you cannot put it to an empirical test. I can prove evolution just by looking at bacteria evolve in a petri plate. And I'll leave that with you, and I enjoyed the show very much.
Well, thank you very much for the comment. Appreciate it. And we have another caller waiting on line number four, our toll-free line. Yes, you're on Keeping the Faith. Yes, line number four.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead. Yes, you're on the air. Hello. Oops, I think we're losing her. Do try us again. Sorry, we had some technical problems. Give us a call. We have time to squeeze that in. Again, that number is 800-222-9455, the toll-free line. And in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Wayne, would you like to respond to the first caller?
Yes, I would. I don't think that Christian apologists are attempting to prove God. I think that they're showing evidence. I also think that a question needs to be asked. Who gets to define science? If we're going to define it the way the caller did, perhaps they're right. This is not hard science. But there is such a thing as soft sciences. Theology, philosophy are those. There are sciences that attempt to show that design exists. What's the science, by the way, that actuarial science? They work at trying to prove that there is such a thing as a design in a crime, for instance.
Let's go back to our caller on line number four. Yes, you're on the air. Just have a couple minutes. Go ahead.
Hello, this is Chris Carter. I got my degree at the University of Illinois, and I'm a recently certified biology teacher in the state. And I just wanted to weigh in a few of Wayne's comments earlier about intelligent design being taught in the public school system. And this is something that I am very much against, even though I am a Christian, and some people are kind of surprised to hear that. But for the most part, it's basically coming out of a paper that I had written on this topic, in that the intelligent design movement really historically came out of a Supreme Court case which ruled that creationism could not be taught in the public schools because it is a religion and not an actual hard science. And if you look at a lot of kind of the original intelligent design movement, it basically paralleled creationism in many ways, and in a sense was kind of a new way to try to push some of these ideas into the public school system. And personally, my personal belief is that there is some sort of intelligent design in the universe, but there's no way really for hard science or biology to describe that. And that's basically just what I want to say.
All right. Thank you very much for that comment. And let's try to squeeze in one more comment. Line number one, go ahead. Line number one, you have 1 minute. Yes, are you there?
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
I have a question in that God is omnipotent and all-knowing, all-seeing. And if that's the case, then he had to know that Hitler and all the tragedies that men do to other men was going to happen. And my question is why does he want to put us through all this pain?
All right. We'll let our guest try to respond.
Thank you.
You don't have long.
I don't. I don't know why God allowed the world to be created beautiful and then allowed it to be corrupt. There is something about light and dark going on. It is a tragic history of the human race, but there is a beautiful, romantic, powerful, victorious story coming through that darkness. Probing the mind of God, why he made such a powerful story, maybe it's at the heart that he is the writer of great adventure. I don't know. One thing I wanted to say...
I think we could at least say that God's a libertarian. God certainly loves freedom.
I wanted to go back, though, to what something was said earlier. You know, we talk about hard sciences. Isn't it interesting, Steve, how many of the great scientists did bring up the discussion of creation? Einstein, Newton, both were fascinated with God's involvement in creation. Several Nobel laureates quickly slide into this discussion. They don't see the hermetically sealed compartments between the two.
I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it at that. We're down to our last few seconds. Let me just thank our guests and our callers. Wayne Wager has been our guest. He's the pastor of Atlanta Life Christian Fellowship, part of the Great Commission Ministry Churches. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these programs. Next week, we'll be talking with Mark Gunger about marriage and relationships. The following week with Professor Linda Lahovic from the School of Dance here at the University of Illinois and Tim Stromer from Kids Against Hunger on June 15. A reminder, if people would like to volunteer to help at the University YMCA this week with our program Dump and Run, where we collect all manner of things, if you could help us sort and box and make decisions about all kinds of clothes and furniture and household items, do give us a call. We'll be opening on Tuesday at 9 o'clock in the morning, 337-1500. And thank you for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Warrantless wiretapping, secret CIA prisons, extraordinary rendition, waterboarding. I'm Jim Fleming. Next time on To the Best of Our Knowledge, we'll go to the dark side of secrecy and a classified Pentagon black ops budget worth some $30 billion. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 7 on WILL Urbana. On this Memorial Day, Peace Talks Radio presents Taken Too Soon, The Cost of War. Nearly 40 public radio producers from around the world lend their voices to a roll call of just some of the names of casualties from the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, including coalition soldiers, Iraqi and Afghan civilians, contractors, and journalists. That's Taken Too Soon, The Cost of War, Memorial Day afternoon at 1 here on WILL Urbana. Tonight in Champaign-Urbana, mostly cloudy with a slight chance of showers this evening and chances increasing after midnight. The low in the lower 60s with south winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, showers and thunderstorms likely with the high in the upper 70s and southwest winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, showers and thunderstorms likely with the low in the mid to upper 50s.